It's Paul Smolin, MD, your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions, he has answers. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Dr. Paul Smolin here. Thanks for joining me. I developed PEDcast to help parents navigate a myriad of parenting topics ranging from infancy to graduation, from the delivery room to the boardroom. In these PEDcasts, I express general observations and opinions that I have developed in my generation of pediatric practice and parenting. I am not providing medical judgments or advice. Let's talk kids with today's topic. Thank you for joining me today for another episode of DocSmo.com. Now, here's a question I know a lot of parents wonder about because they frequently ask it. Why do we get blood counts on kids when they come to the doctor? How much can you tell about somebody's health anyway from just a little teeny drop of blood? Well, actually, you can tell quite a lot, as you're going to see from today's PEDcast. Now, yesterday, a mom asked me sort of a similar question. She remembered when she was a child, that she got a blood count every time she went to the doctor, which was common practice 30 years ago, and she was wondering why we don't do more blood counts. She found it very reassuring to know that her blood count was normal. Well, that seems logical, but hopefully by the end of this talk today, you will understand why this is no longer done. So today's topic, we're going to discuss questions of why and when do doctors get blood counts? And along the way, learn a little about human blood physiology. Let's get started by learning something about human blood. Now, you recall there are two parts to human blood. There's the cellular part and the water part. Now, the water part is called serum. And serum is full of various stuff like proteins, minerals, those coagulation factors that keep us from bleeding to death when we cut ourselves, antibodies that are ready to fight invading microbes, and on it goes. All this stuff is water soluble, and that constitutes the water part of blood. Then there's the cellular part of blood, and it's composed of three types of cells. The white blood cells, which, by the way, are actually white, the red blood cells, which, by the way, are actually red, and the platelets, which I believe are colorless. I'm not sure. So all these cells come from stem cells, those primordial, primitive cells that are in our bone marrow that can then, as they grow, specialize into either white cells, red cells, or platelets. Now, blood is produced mostly in our bone marrow, especially in the bone marrow of our spine, ribs, and skull. Once those specialized cells are produced in the bone marrow, they're released into the circulation just when they're needed. Now, the white blood cells, they're involved in mostly fighting infection. They're our immune system. They are our defense system. The red blood cells, on the other hand, they're mainly responsible for moving oxygen to our tissues. They're the cells that have that red stuff, that hemoglobin, that binds to oxygen and moves it around our body. And then finally, the platelets, those are the cells, they're really teeny little cells, and they plug up leaks. They stop bleeding when Johnny hits Janie, and Janie's got problems with bruising and bleeding. The platelets just plug up the little leaks as fast as they can. So, let's review. White blood cells, infection fighters. Red blood cells, moving oxygen around your body. Platelets are for trauma. They plug little leaks and holes. Now, most people have very little concept of how dynamic our bodies are. And dynamic is the word of the hour when it comes to blood. Our blood is constantly changing. We are constantly making new blood cells of all the cell lines, the white cells, the the red cells, and the platelets. Now, it's important to understand that platelets and white cells are very short lifespan creatures. They only live hours to days. That's right, hours to days. Every few hours, we replace our platelets. Every few days, we replace our white cells. Now, red cells, on the other hand, they are very long-living cells. They live about 4 months, and that's an eternity when it comes to blood cells. So, platelets and white cells, hours to days. Red cells, months. Hence, now you can understand that if somebody has a disease process that's been going on for a long time, it might affect their red blood cell count. But it has to be going on for weeks to months before that's likely to happen. On the other hand, disease processes that involve bleeding, i.e. platelets, or infection, i.e. white cells, they're likely to show up in our blood in just a matter of hours or days. So back to the question of why your child's pediatrician might want to see what your child's blood count is. Well, now that you know a little bit about the cells that are in blood, you know that if your child has some bruising or bleeding that seems unusual, your child's doctor is going to want to look at, right, the platelet count. And if your child looks pale and tired, and looks like they don't have a lot of the red stuff of blood, they're going to want to look at their red blood count. Anemia. The most common reason, however, your child's pediatrician wants to check their blood count is during a fever, because your child's doctor wants to know what your child's white blood count response during that fever is. Remember, white blood cells are the cells that fight infection. So, those white blood counts are very useful in sorting out what kind of infection a child has. If they have a low white count, they likely have a viral infection. If they have a high white count, beware. They may have a serious bacterial infection like pneumonia or a urinary tract infection or what's called sepsis, bacteria in the bloodstream. Counting the number of white blood cells is one of the most cherished and useful tools of medicine. It goes back to the beginning of medicine, to the beginning of microscopes. Now, in the old days, these cells were hand-counted under a microscope. But today, it's all automated with computers. So, we take a drop of blood, we stick it in a computer, and voila, there's the answer in a matter of minutes. When your child shows up at his or her doctor's office, especially when they're very young and can't tell the doctor much about their symptoms, it's extremely useful to have a white blood count. Because remember, high blood counts mean danger. Low blood counts usually mean a viral illness, a benign, self-limiting illness that's going to go away without any medicine whatsoever. Now, fever usually means that a child has an infection. Not always, but usually. And the question is, what type of germ has entered your child? A virus or a bacteria? And as I just told you, white blood counts are very useful in sorting out that question. Now, we can't see the germs that go in your child, but we can see how their body responds to those germs. And that's one of the main uses of a blood count. I like to use the rock, ripple, and splash analogy with my patients. It's really easy to understand. Let's say you're standing by a pond, and you're not facing the pond, and you hear something go in the pond. You hear a splash, and you turn around, and you see ripples and the splash. Well, you probably have a pretty good idea, was that a pebble that went in the water, or was that a big boulder that went in the water, by the sound, the look of the splash, and the intensity of the ripples. Well, that's sort of what we're doing with blood counts and children when they come sick. We can't see the germs that go in the child, but we can see how their body reacts to that, their white blood count. Here are a few scenarios where your child's doctor might want to order a CBC, you know, a complete blood count. Now, there are a few checkup visits that it's considered standard practice to get a blood count. That's one time is in infancy during the second half of the first year of life, looking for iron deficiency or some kind of a genetic anemia, low red count. And in those teenage girls, once they've started their periods, we're looking for iron deficiency again in them. That's a nutritional thing. Another situation would be during an illness. Remember, we're looking for those situations where people have fever and high white counts or a marked change, a drop in their platelet count. There's some very serious infections that are associated with those situations. Now, during sick visits that involve some bleeding or bruising, your doctor's going to want to know your child's platelet count. So they're going to get a CBC to look to see if your child has a low platelet count. Are they not making platelets properly, or are they consuming those platelets so fast that they have a low platelet count? And then there are the more unusual situations where a child seems to have a chronic disease process that may be malignant or inflammatory, and child's doctor wants to see if the red count and white count and platelet counts are altered, because they frequently are in some of these chronic disease processes. Well, let's get back to my patient's question of why not get CBCs, complete blood counts, routinely each well visit, just like the old days. Why not? It's fun to turn to the nurse and say, I need a CBC, stat. You know, stat means right away. Well, now that you know a lot more about blood, you understand that blood is very dynamic. It's constantly changing. And the blood we have this week is totally different than the blood we had last week, except for our red blood count. So, if somebody comes to the doctor with Rocky Mountain spotted fever or leukemia, it's likely that they would have had a normal CBC a week before they got sick. Just a week before they got sick. Full-blown sick. Checking their blood count when they're ill is likely to be useful, but checking it before and after is likely to be fruitless. Those yearly blood counts are very good for anxious people, but not very useful for detecting disease. There's a very low yield of picking up disease on routine CBCs in children, except when you're looking for anemia. Remember, that anemia stuff is a slow process. So we usually do that around a year of age, and on all the teenage girls, in both situations, most often looking for iron deficiency, inadequate iron intake. And while we're talking about lab tests, here's an important point that you need to keep in mind for your own health care as well as your kids. When any lab test is ordered on you or your child, you need to be asking the question, well, how am I going to be notified of the results of this test? And I don't think you should accept the answer, well, we'll call you if it's not right, because that's not considered best practices. Your child's health care provider should have a mechanism for reporting all lab tests. It's a sign of quality health care. So look for that in your doctor's office. Well, hopefully that discussion improved your understanding of why doctors do what they do. Thanks for joining me today. If you enjoy this kind of discussion, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and be a regular listener and get a free pediatric education. Tell your friends and spread the DocSmo word. As always, I would love to hear your comments. And if you're a healthcare worker and you would like to add some insightful wisdom to our discussion, your comments are very, very welcome, and I will highlight them on my blog. This is Dr. Paul Smolin, your PEDcast host, broadcasting from the fabulous Studio 1E in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina, wishing your children a flood of healthy blood. Until next time. I want to thank the following people for their contributions to this PEDcast. Seth Jaffe for his creative editing. Sarah Smolin for her digital editing and photography, and Ben Smolin, Jerome Moof, and Robert Beezer for providing this wonderful music you are hearing. Thanks, guys.